You're listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite. Do you want to speak with confidence and authority, have more influence, and get bigger and better results? Whether you're a top executive, an entrepreneur, or climbing the career ladder, this is the show for you. The leader who wants to inspire others and leave a lasting legacy. Now here's your host, world-renowned TEDx speaker, author, and executive communication coach, Dr. Laura Sekola.
Welcome to the podcast, Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite. I'm Dr. Laura Sekola, your host, and our focus is on mastering communication as an essential leadership skill so that you can command the room, connect with the audience, and close the deal in any context. My guest this week is Ngozi Okeh. She is the global head of DEI at Next Role, a marketing tech company. She's also the editor at practicalesg.com, a one-stop shop for all things ESG and DEI, otherwise known as, of course, environmental, social, and governance. That's the ESG. And diversity, equity, and inclusion. That's the DEI part. She's also a mom of 1 and 3-year-old boys, so she has a busy house. Ngozi, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us a fun fact about yourself.
One fun fact about me, which I like to reminisce on because it has been a little while since I've been in half marathon condition, but I used to run half marathons and I've run about 30 half marathons.
Wow.
Date. The Rock and Roll series is my favorite. So that's something fun about me.
That is impressive. And if you're used to chasing after 2 toddler boys, you have the stamina. So I do truly believe that you are capable of that.
Thank you.
That's amazing. What's your fastest time in a half marathon?
Oh, like 2 hours, about 2 hours. So I'm not the fastest. I'm not winning the marathon, but 2 hours is pretty good for over 13 miles.
I'm impressed. But you made it still breathing and on your own 2 feet and whatever else. I mentioned the longest I ever did was a 10 miler. And I mentioned it to my mother-in-law that my goal was just to get across, own 2 feet and still breathing. And she burst out laughing. She said, that's what my friend, you know, they're all 80 years old, give or take. And she said, that's what my friends and I talk about. The goal is just to be vertical and ventilated. So you've done it 30 times over. That's amazing. I'm super impressed.
Thank you.
So tell us now about Next Role. What's your 30-second elevator pitch?
Next Role is a marketing tech company. And the work that I do with Next Role is to help Next Role to build better products, to do better business, and to essentially grow the business by driving greater internal diversity, including diversity in leadership, by ensuring that we are equitable and that we are conducting practices in an equitable manner, like promotion cycles, et cetera. And that we've got programs and events and practices, and essentially our culture is one that drives inclusion for all of our rollers. And that's what we call our employees, rollers.
Rollers, I like that. That's like high rollers. That's even better. We're going to go move your way up the ladder. And that's a fun title. Now, what's something that you wish more people understood about your role, your company, or your industry? And what's your role personally in changing this perception?
Right now, DEI is getting a bad rep. And I don't know that DEI has ever really had a great rep. But
sure.
Things are particularly tough right now, I think, with notable figures saying things like, you know, DEI is dead or needs to die, or, you know, sort of using that huge umbrella of DEI and throwing the whole thing away.
Mm.
And that's tough, but it's something that I really wish more people would dig into, right? And scrutinize a bit that concept of, well, DEI is dead or DEI is difficult. Mm. Because I think that, you know, DEI is not just like this monolithic, theoretical word, right? It really is about the practices that we engage in every day that shape our workplace and shape people's opportunities and ultimately shape our economy and shape the world that we're in, right? So DEI is not going anywhere. It already is. And so that's one of the things that I, you know, want in this space. I'm just seeing a lot more scrutiny and criticism and skepticism of DEI as a whole without really getting into it and understanding, what am I talking about when I say DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion? What does that look like? Is this something that we're not already at? We're already here. We're in an increasingly global world. And so our workplaces, our societies are already quite diverse. We maybe don't have a lot of equity and maybe there's not a lot of inclusion, but that's what we need to work on. Diversity is not something that we can throw away. It's something that already is. And so we might as well get better at it. And it's in the best interest of businesses. And that's one thing I really love about Nextrel and the work that we do is that we take it very seriously. And we believe that it isn't just something that is nice to do, right? It's something that helps us grow our business, do better business, and build better products.
So let's look at the framing, I think, in a lot of people's minds. If I'm hearing you correctly, it sounds like many people are looking at DEI as a box to check. It's like, and we already have lots of diverse people in our organization, so we're done, and we don't need to keep talking about this thing. Whereas it's really more about the daily existence, the experience that people are having in all of their interactions and all of their opportunities, and is infusing more of the day-to-day. So people are missing often the experience part of it.
And people do see it as a box to check, but I think people also see it as something that they have to sort of sacrifice.
How so?
So when I talk to companies, and I did DEI consulting for several years, actually, before working at Nextrel and being an editor for practicalesg.com. And in talking with companies and company leaders, oftentimes I'd hear things like, well, you know, we have other priorities right now, or we have other business interests right now, or we don't really have time, or we don't have resources. And so it always sort of feels like DEI is in opposition to the business interests, right? It's like, yeah, we can, this is sort of a philanthropic thing that we're doing, right? And we're doing it in goodwill and we're sacrificing business to do it. And that is not the right perspective at all. I mean, there's a lot of data already that you don't have to go far to find the data that shows you that you do better business, right? So it is not against your business interests. It is in your business interests to understand what diversity looks like for your organization, because it really does depend on the organization, to make sure that you are treating employees equitably. And that is not a stretch, right?
Sure.
That's everybody wants to be treated equitably, right? We want to make sure that promotion practices aren't biased against one group or one person over another, right? That's something that whether we put the DEI title on it or not, we ought to be doing, right? Because that motivates our employees to do their best work, to be productive.
So who do you talk to and how do you help to change that perception?
I talk to executive leaders a lot about this work, and for a couple of reasons, right? Executive leaders, that's really, these are the biggest stakeholders for any organization when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion, because they're the ones making the big decisions. They're the ones that really set the tone for the organization, set the direction and the priority for the organization. So I have worked at and worked with companies where DEI was only of concern to maybe a couple of people in HR, or it was sort of a grassroots effort and executive leadership was not invested in it at all, it doesn't work.
So what do you say when you're engaging with these leaders? How do you start those conversations, or how do we continue to promote this as opposed to just, you need to check this box, which clearly is not the case?
Yes. And this took me some time to really understand and observe, because initially I would be in conversations with executive leaders, and that no matter how much data I put in front of them, it would be difficult to get them to understand why this should be important to them. It always felt like we were having separate conversations of like, let's move DEI forward. And then like, okay, yes. And there are these other business priorities, right? And what I've learned over the years is that my first step in engaging executive leaders is really to understand what's important to them, to understand the language that they speak, and to understand what their priorities are. And so I do that just by asking them, what are the biggest things that you've been facing recently, right? What is the next frontier for you? What is your ultimate goal? What is a legacy that you want to leave for this organization, right? And then I understand what's really, really important to them. And then I say, okay, well, great. We've got the same interests, right? You want to, you know, maybe you're head of engineering. And so you want to make sure that you and your team are producing the most innovative products or the most innovative programs for our customers. I want that too. I love that. We've got the same goal. And here's where our worlds collide, right? You can't do that unless you make sure that you have a diversity of people at the table that have different experiences, different levels of insight, right? You want to make sure that you do increase diversity on our teams or in our workplace. Then we want to make sure that, you know, we look at numbers. Are we promoting them equitably? Right? Because you're not going to get the best out of somebody if they are not feeling valued, you know, equitably and rewarded equitably. So let's look at that and make sure that we are like priming our team members for success in that way. And then how are they feeling being a part of this team, right? Do they feel like they belong? Do they feel like they can do their best work and they can bring their best self to work every day? Because that ultimately is going to lead us to that greater innovation, those better products that you want to build, you know, that's going to help you leave that legacy for the company. So we are on the same team here.
Sure.
And then that is really where I've seen a breakthrough, where they're like, oh, I get it now. You're speaking my language. I understand why DEI should be important to me because it helps me get to my goal.
Yes. And there's always that little detail of retention too, which is if people feel like there's no opportunity for me here, I'm not being appreciated, respected, groomed of sorts for more opportunity. I'll take what I learned here and go somewhere else where they will appreciate me. It's like any relationship at that point. So that whole turnover and retention, losing your best talent otherwise, that also certainly hits the bottom line, which I think a lot of business leaders are certainly focused on, if nothing else. So I think that's great. So what I'm hearing is you are starting by identifying their priorities first and then being able to show the application of how DEI is relevant to what their ultimate goals are and using their words to help to identify what's most important to them.
Yes.
Great.
That's it.
All right. So then what is a time when you've been emotionally vulnerable with your team and how did it impact your relationship with them moving forward?
So I engage in vulnerability every day. It's hard to pinpoint a moment where I am vulnerable because I bring that side of me in every meeting that I have. Okay. And this wasn't always the case. I felt having elevated into leadership roles pretty early on in life, mm-hmm. right? Like for years, I had found myself and still tend to find myself as the only Black woman in leadership spaces.
Sure.
I used to be the youngest only Black. You know, I used to work in marketing in mortgage banking, and mortgage banking is a very older, white, male dominated industry,
sure.
especially in leadership roles. Mm-hmm. And so I would find myself often as not just the only Black woman at the table, but the youngest person
yes.
at the table. And I would put a lot of pressure on myself. I mean, there was internal pressure and there was also external pressure because I've been in a lot of toxic environments, but there was a lot of pressure for perfection
yes.
where I couldn't really show vulnerability, couldn't show weakness. I had to constantly monitor my facial expression, right? Nothing could ever faze me, even if something was upsetting. Never show it, never make somebody else feel bad in that environment because essentially I was on my own and I felt what that looked like. I had to defend myself in every moment.
How frustrating.
Yeah. And there's sort of a lot of internal anxiety in that that is unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I've learned to do over the years, and it sort of got to a point actually in that environment where it impacted my health,
sure.
internal health, yes, mental health, but also my physical health. I actually ended up, my first son, I was pregnant with my first son and actually had him very early at 25 weeks due to severe preeclampsia. Mm. And that was tough because he was a 1-pound baby. Oh. He was smaller than my hand.
Oh.
And I almost lost my life. My blood pressure was through the roof. Mm. And my son almost lost his life. He had like a 50 chance. Mm. And so he spent over 4 months in the NICU. And that was the moment where I said, okay, something has got to change here. Because it really is a matter of life and death. And so that sort of anxiety that I've experienced actually throughout my life, it didn't really just begin in that environment where I was the only.
Sure.
I've had anxiety. I've had anxiety disorder throughout my life,
wow.
which was something I learned. And I learned that it no longer served me in this stage in life.
Does it ever?
You know what? It did.
Okay.
I got to tell you that it was something that as a young person, it kind of kept me going. That pursuit for excellence, pursuit for perfection kept me going and helped me to do things, to excel in school. And,
sure.
you know, and so maybe it wasn't like healthy per se, you know, but it propelled me
sure.
towards a life that I'm proud of now, right? With
That's
you know,
amazing.
Educational accolades and all of that. I'm proud of that. However, as a mother, it no longer served me. And then being in that environment where there was that internal pressure, that external pressure, I decided that I can't set myself up for meeting an impossible standard of perfection, right?
Yes.
And so I had to really, you know, through lots of therapy and lots of introspection, really learn to understand what I needed to be my best self, but also to contribute fully in these environments.
Sure.
Because what would happen, Dr. Laura, is I'd be in these meetings and I would engage in conversations with other leaders. And actually, I wouldn't necessarily engage in conversation. There would be conversations with other leaders. And I would feel frozen. Mm. I would feel like because I don't have a fully formed thought, because I don't know that it's perfect, I don't have all of the like big words or all of the language.
You don't have the answer.
Yeah, I don't have the final answer. It kind of kept me frozen in these spaces. And what would happen is that we would spend an hour in a meeting and land on a decision or something that I had thought of 10 minutes into the meeting already, right? And so I thought that these people, you know, there's a sense of like imposter syndrome there, sort of like early on in my career as well, where I thought, oh, these people like know so much more than me, right? They're like older and I, you know, and I'm the only, so I'm representing, I've got, you know,
pressure,
a lot of communities on my shoulders. I have to represent well for women everywhere, for Black people everywhere, for young people everywhere, you know? So it would keep me frozen. And after enough of those meetings, I was like, wait, there's nobody here that's brilliant beyond me. You know, like what we spent 60 minutes deciding on, I had already thought about that 10 minutes into this meeting, right? And so why not me? I'm paid to be in these spaces. I bring something very valuable and very important to the discussion. And so I kind of go through a lot of these meetings, have sort of my health crisis, and then get to a place where I'm like, okay, what do I need to do to bring my best self in these situations? So I did a couple of things. One, I changed my external environment. And so I worked in a place that was a lot healthier for me, that felt better. People were better to me.
Good.
And then I also changed the negative thought patterns in my head that would tell me that I had to wait, that I had to wait to have the perfect thing to say, that I had to wait to say it perfectly, right? And I started giving myself permission to say it anyway.
Good.
And the way that I did that is by, when I'm in meetings, and I'm in a lot of meetings, one of the things that I'll start with is, you know, this isn't fully formed yet. So I'll sort of give myself permission to introduce an imperfect thought or an imperfect idea, right? And so I'm always saying some sort of iteration of, this isn't a fully formed thought yet. This isn't a fully formed idea, but let me just put it on the table, right? And then I'll say whatever it is.
Sure.
Or, you know, I haven't thought this through all the way, but maybe y'all can help me finish the thought. You know, so let me put it out there. And so it gives them something to react to, knowing that this is imperfect. I set the expectation already.
Yes.
And that way it allows me to breathe.
Sure.
You know, and not feel like, oh, I have to be perfect. I've got to paint the picture just so that I, you know, am perceived as competent.
Yes.
Right. It's like nobody is perfect.
Absolutely.
And so we're taking that off the table. And so let me introduce my idea in a way that makes me feel better about it and provides the context too for others to know, okay. And I found that this is not only helpful for me because now I'm speaking up more and putting valuable ideas that otherwise I wouldn't have put on the table in discussions.
Sure.
But I find that it also helps others. It helps team members to see that.
Yep.
And so I've seen more people do that, sort of adopt that method because it opens the door for them to actually more meaningfully contribute.
There's so many people that I speak with who are struggling with that same challenge of, I'm afraid to say something that's not complete and perfect and right and the answer, et cetera. And it's funny, one of the assignments that I've given clients in these kinds of things is I want you to go to your next meeting and I want you to see how many people contribute something that is like almost tally, if you can, on a piece of paper. How many are giving complete, full, and correct answers? And how many are just contributing pieces to the puzzle? And everybody inevitably comes back and goes, nobody gave the answer. It was something that we all kind of co-constructed. And I'll geek out for a second, but there are principles like sociocultural theory in learning and co-construction of knowledge, Piagetian and Vygotskian theories, blah, de, blah. But the point is that this is, more often than not, how stuff gets done and how we learn and how we come to decisions together is because it's all the ideas that come in together. Hence, to your earlier point, why diversity of perspective is important, because there are other pieces that we wouldn't necessarily have thought of that can either help to weed out or help to add to the pieces that we need to identify what is the best collective answer to go forward with next. And it's just, it's such a, I'm glad that you brought it up. It's such a commonly experienced head trash for so many people. Take out the head trash, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep.
It's not serving you at all. Watch. Does anybody out there put something out that's incomplete? And for that matter, watch, even to the extent that we're saying, okay, as a woman or as this or as that, watch how the guys treat each other. because they're going to shoot each other down too. And not necessarily in a mean or vicious way, or maybe it is, I don't know. But chances are they're going to say, yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but, and that's part of the process. So dig in, jump in. That's, make your contributions.
Exactly. And I think we tend to enter into these spaces sometimes, especially if you identify as an only or you come from an underrepresented group.
Yes.
We tend to feel like everybody in this room is like brilliant. They must be because they're here. And it's better to think, I'm in this room. I must be one of the brilliant people.
Yes.
Therefore, let me put on the table what I bring.
Yes.
And together we'll produce something brilliant collectively.
So I'm going to throw this suggestion out there and let me know how it lands with you. And we can share with the group too, that an alternative way to frame that. So you've given yourself permission, which is so important to start with that mindset of I can give an incomplete thought rather than prefacing even as this is incomplete, but which is starting with disclaimers to say, so here's a piece that I think might be valuable. Here's one piece we haven't addressed yet is. And it just acknowledging that here's a piece to the puzzle that I'm adding it. I'm not going to diminish it. I'm not going to disclaim it. Just letting people know, hey, I'm brilliant. Remember, you invited me to this room because we've already acknowledged that. And so here's a little piece of brilliance that I'm going to sprinkle in there to add to that puzzle. So how does that land with you?
Oh, that lands very well. To me, it's not all that different. I feel there's a nice array of options to pick from that you can use for whatever is working at the moment. So sometimes I just say, I have a thought.
Yes.
Here's a thought,
yes.
Right? So I'm not apologizing for having something that is unfinished or imperfect. You know, I'm just putting it out there in whatever way that looks like in the moment. Sometimes it's, yeah, here's a thought. Sometimes it's, this isn't fully formed, but I'm going to put it on the table anyway.
I think it's so good to give people the options of those framings, especially if you are somebody out there who you realize you over-apologize for everything. And there are lots of people and groups that are known for, but nevertheless, as an individual, ask yourself, am I someone who over-apologizes? Am I someone who diminishes? Okay, then choose an option that is not under that category. If you're someone who's known for a little bit of steamrolling, then perhaps find ways to qualify or hedge those contributions a little bit to show that you are open to the discussion of that piece that you're putting in. You're not expecting people to just accept or reject. There's so many great framings to encourage collaboration in a way that values and validates the contributions of everybody, including yourself. I think we forget to do that. So I'm so glad we went down this rabbit hole.
Me too.
All right. So I'm going to have you challenge everybody else now that we've just gone in that general direction. It's time for our listener 24-hour influence challenge. So Ngozi, this is your chance to challenge our listeners to take one step that they can complete within 24 hours to have more influence. How would you like to challenge our listeners today?
I challenge our listeners to find a mantra that works for their biggest need right now, whatever that is. So, you know, I mentioned that I've struggled with anxiety disorder my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I found myself in leadership roles for a long time. And so I experienced a lot of anxiety in spaces, but I've never, ever let it stop me. And so I've never let the fear of anything stop me from doing that thing.
Yeah.
My mantra for many years has been do it afraid, because I know I'm going to feel afraid, but I do it anyway. And that has taken me so far. So I love that mantra. And if that mantra, if, you know, this topic is resonating with some folks and they want to take that mantra, go for it, use it. But maybe you're encountering a different challenge, right?
Yeah.
Find a mantra so that you can reframe some negative thought patterns into more helpful thought or ideology that's going to propel you towards action.
I love that. And did you write it down someplace? Is it in sticky notes? You write it on your hand? Is it stuck to your computer someplace?
So actually, I'm a sticky person. So I do put stickies everywhere. And I used to actually have that written, but now it's like embedded into me. I should get it tattooed on my forehead. That's how much a part of me that mantra is.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So I love that the do it afraid. I mean, what is the definition of courage? It's not fearlessness, right? Courage is feeling the fear and doing it anyway.
Yeah.
Doing it in the face of the fear. So that's amazing. All right, everybody, get out your post-it note, come up with your 3, 4, 5 word mantra and figure out a way to incorporate that into your daily affirmations, incantations, or just morning routine, looking at yourself in the bathroom mirror, whatever it takes before and after. So love it. Okay. What's the most nervous you ever felt before a presentation or speaking engagement, and communications related lessons did you learn from the experience?
So, you know, I don't know that I have one moment that stands out to me because I get nervous all the time.
Sure.
All the time. And I speak publicly a lot. So I speak at global company meetings. I do a lot of public speaking and I'm nervous every single time.
Sure.
2 days ago, we had an all ERG board meeting. Mm-hmm. And so we had about, it was like maybe 40, 50 of our ERG leaders and executive sponsors, and executive sponsors are executive leaders in our organization. It was a 2024 kickoff. And I actually coordinated the meeting because we had a lot of changes in the last year. And so we've seen sort of ups and downs, and we've had a lot of, you know, challenges in terms of morale, perhaps.
Okay.
And I mean, our ERGs have still been rock stars. And so I wanted to take a moment to do a couple of things. I wanted to appreciate the work that they've been doing despite the rocky year that we had last year. I also wanted to give them all the resources that they needed for the year. And I also wanted to encourage them. So for like a full hour, that was Ngozi talking in a large group that included, you know, executive leaders and other managers and leaders throughout the company. And I did a couple of things to set me up for success. One, I made sure to exercise in the morning because I find that that helps me to kind of let go of some of those nerves and get me pumped up. So I'm sort of expressing that physical anxiety in a positive way and setting myself up for success. So that's one thing that I try to always do before a speaking engagement. And then the other thing is, again, that mantra of do it afraid. I recognize that I've been in this situation before. And so these nerves are familiar. And yes, I'm a little nervous about speaking in front of people, but it didn't stop me from doing it. So as soon as I started, I kind of just like went through it and it was successful. I did try to be thoughtful about the presentation to make sure that there were interactive moments, to make sure that I introduced content that I knew would be helpful for my audience. So I really thought about them and catered it towards them so that they would feel like it was a good use of their time. And the feedback I got was that, yes, it was. This was very good information and it was encouraging and motivating. It
sounded like part of the goal was to quell some anxieties or concerns of everybody, but also to encourage and thus to inspire them. How'd the inspiration part go?
The inspiration part went well because I thought about different ways that people feel inspired. And here's the thing, my love language is words of affirmation, okay? So it is not hard for me to motivate and inspire. I love shining light on the good that people do. It comes naturally to me. I enjoy doing it. But I had to think about what are the different ways that people receive encouragement or receive motivation. And so I did share, you know, things like, we as an organization, we appreciate you and all of that, right? That language. Mm-hmm. But also I included the data that showed that our ERGs were really impactful, even through 2023, which was a rocky year, right? Mm-hmm. So we have these annual DEI surveys that we do. And based on that, we're able to disaggregate the information to see the impact that rollers that attend our ERG.
And rollers is your term for employees, correct?
For employees, right, right. So we're able to disaggregate the data to see, okay, the rollers that attend ERG events versus rollers who don't attend ERG events, how are they experiencing our culture?
And we say ERGs, we're talking employee resource groups.
Well, employee resource groups, yes. I'm using all the acronyms.
Okay, so like the women's group or African-American group or so,
Yeah, and so we've got eight of those. So yeah, we've got a veterans group, a group for people with disabilities, a group for Asians, a group for women. We've got eight of them. So we have quite a bit.
Wow.
And they're amazing, really. And our data shows that they're amazing, right? Because we're able to disaggregate the sentiments of our two groups, right? Of, you know, those who attended ERG events, those who attend ERG events. And our data shows us that those who have attended ERG events actually have a better workplace experience when it comes to voice, when it comes to inclusion, when it comes to belonging, when it comes to several different factors. Many different factors, actually, they are having a much better workplace experience than those who do not attend ERG events. So for the folks that maybe they are not moved by, you know, a pat on the back, like, you know, in,
like lip with service, language,
right, with lip service, exactly. They see those numbers and they're like, I am making a difference. That's encouraging to me, right? And so I made sure to provide the data that shows it, but also the language that helps folks really know how important that impact is to the organization.
Yes.
So that was one way.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And finally, tell me about the it factor. In the past, when you've interviewed candidates for a leadership role, have you ever thought to yourself, wow, this person really has it? What impressed you? What was that it factor?
I understand the it factor. I get it because we've all met people and we're like, oh, this person just feels like they've got it.
Yeah.
However, in the DEI world that I'm in, I actually push back against the it factor.
Okay.
Because it can mask bias quite easily, right? And so when I talk with hiring managers, when I talk with HR teams, one of the things that's really, really important that we do is that we ground qualifications. As we're like interviewing candidates, we need to ground what we're looking at in like qualifications, right? And so we need to know what that is so that people don't get swept away in like an it factor that they cannot explain. Because what that tends to look like sometimes is, oh, this person just like, they feel so familiar, right? Like they feel so familiar and it's just going so easily with them. We speak the same language. You know, we just talked for 20 minutes about the same club that we were at Harvard Business School or something like that. And so they've got it.
Right.
You know, that person just feels right. And that masks bias, right? Mm-hmm. Because we're not assessing that person anymore based on the more objective qualifications that we have laid out for ourselves.
Yeah.
Now there's just this ambiguous wave that we're getting carried away in, and that can be very problematic. And so that is something that I talk about a lot with our hiring managers and just hiring managers in general around, you know, recognizing that, yes, that is a thing, right? We can feel drawn to people for various reasons, but we need to know how to check that and ground our assessment and our decisions in the qualifications that we've laid out in advance. And that goes for hiring someone, that goes for promoting someone, that goes for the informal sponsorship relationships that happen in the workplace, that goes for, you know, giving special assignments, right? We have to really like go back to the more objective standards that we're setting in order to not get swept away in the bias that can be masked in the it factor.
Right, right. So I love it. Everybody out there, I think it seems like if there is that strong gut feeling in one way or another, like I really like or really perhaps don't like this person in one way, shape, or form, what is it that's giving me that instinct? And to back up, because sometimes the instinct is important. If you're like, I'm not even comfortable talking, I can't imagine having this person on the team. Okay, well, why? What is it that's happening? And is it because he reminds me of my ex? Or is it because there's a missing skill set and they're not seeming to be able to answer what are they dancing around the question? Can you identify what's causing that strong gut feeling, yes or no, to help to identify? Because sometimes it is the bias and sometimes it's no, there's something really need to go with that piece. So any other suggestions that you have as far as how to identify, do we listen to that little voice or do we recognize that it shouldn't have quite as loud of a megaphone as it does?
Yeah. So just to sort of like and double tap the comment that you made, it is a moment. It's not, here's the thing is we are biased creatures, right? Like we're human. Sure. So we're not expected to work robotically and we're not even capable of that, quite honestly, right?
Right.
But it really is about putting our feelings and our assessment under a microscope. Right. And say, okay, now why am I feeling that way? Why am I drawn to this person or not drawn to another person? Mm-hmm. So in addition to doing that sort of like self-work, it is helpful also to talk about it with someone else. And so I do encourage, you know, hiring managers, talent acquisition teams, never to work in isolation. Always have a debrief where you are talking about these things and these feelings so that you have other ears and other thoughts that can help you check those things and be open to it, right? Help, you know, so someone can catch it and say, hey, that I understand what you're saying. You're saying that this person, they just feel like a great fit, right? Mm-hmm. But what does that look like? You need to ground that a little bit more in the standards that we've laid out and the skills and the qualifications. Other than that, that can't be a part of the assessment.
Right. And we certainly have to make sure that the objective pieces, skills and background and whatever else are all there too. And it's not that instinctive preference is overlooking the fact that, oh yeah, but they're missing some pretty major skills that we need. But we can't forget to go through the rest of those requirements because we just really like them. And it's so easy to want to go that direction. So having that little mental pilot's checklist of sorts and make sure that we've gone down all the requirements before hitting takeoff.
Yeah. And you know what? There are at least 100 different types of biases. Mm. And so sometimes you're right, our brain can play tricks on us too, where we think that this person who's got the it factor, we feel like, you know, maybe they like barely meet the skills and qualifications, but you feel like, yeah, they're there, you know? And so we can amplify some other things that this person brings to the table and minimize some other things, right? So our brain does play tricks on us where we feel like we're being objective. And even those moments, we need to really scrutinize the decisions that we're making and why.
Yes.
And that's one of the reasons also it can be helpful to have other folks in the room for this sort of deliberation.
Right. That sounding board.
Yeah.
That sounding board.
Exactly.
Well, Ngozi, I have loved this conversation. It is unfortunately time for us to wrap it up a little bit. So can you tell us, how can people learn more about you and NextRoll?
Yeah. You know what? You can check NextRoll out at NextRoll.com. You can check out some of my DEI content on practicalesg.com. And then you can find me on LinkedIn and we can connect there.
Wonderful. And we'll have those links, of course, in the show notes. So with that, thank you so much for joining us today. I've loved every minute of it.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
And to everybody tuning in today, thank you, as always, for listening. Be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or your platform of choice so we can help even more people to increase their confidence, presence, and influence. And finally, if you want to download my free guide to equipment recommendations for virtual influence, including my picks for microphones, lights, and more, go to speakingtoinfluence.com. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, and you're listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Laura Sokola, and I want to sincerely thank you for listening to the Speaking to Influence podcast. If you love listening to these episodes as much as I love bringing them to you, be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And please go to iTunes right now to rate and review our podcast in order to help us expand our reach so even more people can master the 3 C's: to command the room, connect with the audience, and close the deal.
Thanks for listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite, the show for leaders who want to speak with impact. The hosts, producers, owners, and media distributors of the show make no guarantees that the strategies and information discussed will result in profit or other success and may result in losses. The opinions and statements of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the owners, staff, managers, broadcasters, or sponsors of the show. No medical or psychological therapy or personal or professional wellness or relationship advice is offered in the show. You are advised to seek counsel on matters related to your health, family, relationships, job, or other business and legal matters from licensed advisors in those areas prior to making any changes in business or lifestyle. No information provided may be suitable in your situation. As always, take responsibility for the decisions and actions you take, including the reactions they may make in your work, family, health, and life.